This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Walmart, the biggest company and largest employer in the country, is not doing as well as it would like. Over the past 5 years, its stock price has fallen 27%. Sales growth is down. Walmart executives decided that the company's image is part of the problem. Critics blame Walmart for everything from the loss of American jobs to indifference toward its employees, and a new Super Size Me-style documentary on Walmart comes out at the end of this week. Last week, Walmart CEO H. Lee Scott announced a new health care plan for employees, greener environmental policies, and plans to lobby Congress for an increase in the minimum wage. Walmart got a boost from its relief efforts after Hurricane Katrina, but took a public relations hit when a leaked memo proposed to save money on health care costs by trying to dissuade unhealthy people from working at Walmart. And today, the New York Times reported that Walmart has created a political campaign-style war room to generate rapid response to any criticism it may receive. Here in Washington this week, Walmart sponsored an academic conference to consider the question, is Walmart good or bad for the economy? The answers they get may be mixed. We'll talk with one of the presenters who studied Walmart's effect on local labor markets. Later in the program, a presidential panel recommends tax code reforms that are dead on arrival on Capitol Hill. We'll find out why. But first, Walmart. Do you think the company's image is good or bad, and does it make a difference? 800-989-8255 is our phone number. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Aaron Bernstein, a senior writer at Business Week magazine. He's written extensively about Walmart. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Walmart has endured withering attacks from critics for many years now. Why is it starting to reach out to them now?
Well, like you said, its stock price has not been doing well in recent years. Its sales growth has slowed. And while not all of that can be attributed to its reputational problems, clearly its image is taking a blow, and they're worried about it.
Do they have any numbers that suggest their customers are affected by this criticism?
If they do, they haven't shared them publicly, but their sales of their same-store sales have slowed, and more importantly, they know what they're trying to do, which is to expand in places like New York and California, where historically there are much louder critics of Walmart and Walmartization in general. So they're worried that their customers who they're trying to reach it to in these new areas are going to resist and listen to the critics more.
And one of the first questions I guess people are going to ask is, are these new policies that they're talking about, is this just window dressing or is this substance?
Well, it's a little early to tell that at this point. So far, there hasn't been a lot of dramatic moves. The new healthcare policy they announced is possibly going to be of some assistance to some people, but it's not, I don't think, intended to make a wholesale change in their overall health insurance policy. They got 1.3 million workers in this country, and 44% of them get health care through Walmart, which is a very low number.
Mm-hmm. That leaked memo last week didn't help them at all.
It didn't help them at all, and this new plan is going to probably marginally raise that 44%. So it's not going to do all that much. Their environmental policies that they're talking about, reducing packaging size, there are some efforts there which could make a real difference given Walmart's size and clout throughout so many markets.
Mm-hmm. Even porous paving surfaces to reduce the amount of rain runoff from parking lots, that sort of thing.
They're talking about a lot of things. Whether they do it, we'll see how far they go. It's certainly not clear yet. What they have made very clear, and Lee Scott, the CEO, has said several times that they don't want to change their basic business model and specifically their wages. That is probably where they have come under the most criticism, their wages and benefits. Mm-hmm. And the new health care plan is not a new benefit in the sense it's not an increase in the amount that the company, I believe, is going to pay to cover its employees.
Yet at the same time, the CEO says he's going to lobby Congress to increase the minimum wage.
Yeah, that was a shocker. That was a very odd thing coming from pretty much any major corporation, but certainly a low-wage retailing operation like Walmart. Although, you know, a number of economists have pointed out that their average wage is just under $10 an hour. The current federal minimum wage is $5.15. It's not clear how much they would actually be affected if it went up a dollar. It might not even affect them. They They probably have workers who are getting paid $6 and $7 in some rural areas who might be affected, but overall, out of their workforce, they may actually benefit from an increase in the minimum wage because rivals, especially mom-and-pop stores, would be squeezed by that, and Walmart might be less squeezed.
So it might actually increase their competitors' costs more than it would increase theirs.
That's a possibility.
The fact remains, whatever the criticism, low prices are a draw for millions of people who shop at Walmart very happily to get those low prices every day, especially lower-income people.
That's exactly right, and that's something which Walmart has taken a lot of credit for, and plenty of economists give them credit for it, although it's funny, I've been reading some of the academic papers that have been submitted to this conference that you referenced, which Walmart's going to put on this Friday here in Washington, D.C. And I've been following this subject for many years, the low-wage labor market in general and Walmart in particular. And I guess I never looked into this particular aspect of it. The official U.S. government position is that Walmart's prices are no lower than anybody else's, which surprised me. Basically, The economists who calculate the consumer price index for the country as a whole, what they do is they say, look, whatever you buy at Walmart, once you've adjusted for quality, it's no cheaper than anything else. You buy a T-shirt for $5 at Walmart, it's worth $5. You buy one for $10 a penny, it's twice the quality, it's worth $10. That's their official position, and when they calculate Walmart's prices into the overall consumer price index, they don't make adjustments downward to say they're lower. What they're basically doing is the government is essentially saying Walmart is aggregating low-price commodities and putting it all in one store, which may be a service. There's no question about it. That's a valuable service in and of itself. It's not clear whether they're really offering low prices. Plenty of economists think they are. The U.S. government says they aren't. It's an open question where they really are.
It'd be interesting to see if critics in this case believe the U.S. government. Anyway, if you'd like to join our conversation about Walmart, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking about the company's effort to improve its image, and we'll talk now with Martin. Martin's calling us from Silicon Valley in California.
Hey, this is a real great topic. I actually read a really interesting article in Fortune maybe a year ago on Walmart and farming out of jobs and that type of activity. But at a basic level, my opinion is that it seems like Walmart has saturated their market, which is certainly a low-income environment, and now the honeymoon is over and that we're just seeing the dip. They're seeing their revenues drop because the market is no longer, willing to continue to grow in their environment.
Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, in a sense it is. Not entirely, but, like I said a minute ago, they're pushing into more urban areas in New York and Los Angeles and places like that where they have not historically been. There are plenty of poor people there, so they haven't tapped out the low end of the American market. But at the same time, they're reaching into areas where they're not so easily accepted.
Mm-hmm. Well, are they trying to reach out? They're moving into new geographical areas, or are they also trying to attract more upscale customers?
Well, they're doing both, actually. They are hoping to move upscale because while there's still plenty of poor people that don't shop there who they want to get, they realize that's not enough, and ultimately they need to move more into the middle class. And that's where they're trying to bring in a little bit higher quality of goods. You have a different marketing campaign to reach people who haven't typically bought there before.
Mm-hmm. Martin, thanks very much for the phone call.
Well, another comment, if I could.
Sure.
One of the things in Silicon Valley, of course, there's certainly a lot of money in this valley and housing and everything else. There's a super Walmart that just went in about 20 miles south of here. And I've been there, and certainly there's a stigma about going to Walmart. I don't think just generically as a society people are going to admit they go to Walmart in the Silicon Valley environment. And I don't know if that's what's happening in California or not to Walmart, but it's certainly an aspect that people consider here, that they're not going to be seen at Walmart and they're not going to comment to anybody that they shop at Walmart.
Aaron Bernstein, are people going to come out of Walmart carrying their stuff in Saks Fifth Avenue bags?
Maybe in affluent areas like Silicon Valley. Clearly that's not what happens in a lot of the rest of the country, but
yeah,
it might in L.A. and San Francisco.
Martin, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Now, there are lots of actions involving Walmart's employees, as you mentioned, this new health care policy and that leaked memo, which was a bit of an embarrassment last week when they said maybe the best way to cut or one way to cut health care costs would be to dissuade unhealthy people from applying to work here, making sure that all of their jobs had some physical aspect to it. Even a checkout clerk had being responsible for at one point in their shift to gather together the cart so that they could have higher standards of, in terms of people's health. If you run, is there enough of a problem with these kinds of things over time to overcome those, the blizzard of advertisements that we see every night on television, where happy people in Walmart uniforms knock down prices?
You mean is it damaging their
image
further?
Yeah.
Oh boy, they've been getting hit a lot in the last week. It wasn't just that memo; they've been getting hit on a lot of fronts. And they still have the largest sex discrimination suit ever pending against them, which is waiting in the background to come before the courts. They have a lot of things out there which are probably it's going to get worse before it gets better from the standpoint of the company's image.
Just today, there was a case involving child discrimination laws where it appears that Walmart got a break from the government in terms of what penalties it was required to pay.
That's right. And the Labor Department was chastised for cutting a deal with Walmart about reporting on those incidents.
Is it unusual for a company to take this kind of action to try to buttress, to spend a lot of money to buttress its public image at a time where they're worried about the bottom line?
No, that's what companies do all the time. That's what public relations campaigns are often about. I mean, you spend a lot of money, marketing and selling your products, but most large companies in some form or another worry about their image and try to polish it in the public eye for a whole variety of reasons. And Walmart at that level is not doing anything else. They just happen to be in the hot seat right now. And, of course, given who they are, the largest company, one of the most influential, with the most market clout, everything they do is very visible, which makes it all the more difficult for them to reverse their image on a quick turnaround basis.
We're talking with Aaron Bernstein, a senior writer at Business Week magazine, about Walmart's efforts to polish its public image. After a short break, we'll hear from a Walmart vice president and from an economist who studied how Walmart affects local job markets. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email totn@npr.org. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about a makeover at Walmart, and we want to hear from you. Does news of Walmart's plan to offer affordable health care, its call for a higher minimum wage, change the way you think about the company? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Aaron Bernstein, a senior writer at Business Week. He's reported extensively on Walmart. In a few minutes' time, we'll hear from a vice president of the company about this, but let's get another caller on the line, and this is Ben. Ben calling us from Salem, Oregon.
Yes, I have. I used to be a customer of Walmart, but I've stopped being a customer of Walmart basically for two primary reasons. The first is that I work for the county health department, and I see their employees who don't have insurance, who can't get 20 hours or more of employment. And the second is that they have built some stores here in Oregon, very environmentally insensitive, building on wetlands and so on, promising to recreate the wetlands elsewhere, but not having done so.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's presumably at least local politicians, or at least if what you're saying is accurate, partly to blame for that.
Well, partly to blame for allowing them to do that, yes.
Yeah. I wonder, Aaron Bernstein, Ben, I gather Ben is not alone, or else we might not be seeing this public relations program.
Well, that's right, actually. And the point about public health care plans is one that Walmart has come under particular criticism for in recent years, which is that because they cover such a few number of their workers, a lot of their workforce that gets paid very little, poverty-level wages, ends up going on Medicaid, which is obviously the federal health care program for the poor. Basically, what that means is taxpayers are helping to foot the bill for Walmart employees' health care, mm-hmm. and that grates on the public.
Ben, let me ask you, some of the other people you see in your line of work, do they shop at Walmart?
Some do because of the prices. And I know that Walmart carries a lot of the identical items that are found in other stores, and they do have lower prices. But my economic situation is such that I can afford to stay away from them.
Ben, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
We may have misled, or one of our callers may have misled, or made a misleading statement about Walmart's revenues. Their rate of growth in stores has slowed. Their revenue has not, just to clarify that. Anyway, let's get another caller on the line, and this is Russell. Russell calling us from Naples, Florida.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine.
I just want to make the point that, you know, I do shop at Walmart because of the fact that it really helps me with my bottom line. You know, the fact that people are unsatisfied with the benefits and the way they treat their employees, you know, that's something that they need to deal with from it, with inside, you know. If they don't think that they're treating their employees fairly, then maybe they should be employed somewhere else.
And Aaron Bernstein, well, that's one of the many things the company says. Look, we're providing a service to all kinds of people, especially poor people in this country, by providing stuff for sale at low prices.
That's right. And, you know, the broader issue here is what for several years critics have been calling the Walmartization of the U.S. economy, which is, cutting prices for consumers, which is a good thing, but doing so to such extremes that you immiserate the workforce of America, which is paying wages that people can't, sustain a family on.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, if everybody does that, you know, the more companies that follow that model, the more we will have more poor people in America who can't afford to buy the products at some point that they even sell in Walmart. It's a negative downward spiral for the economy as a whole, which is why the critics, you know, say, look, of course you can go get a job somewhere else. You know, many people, of course, can't. But even if they could, the point is that an economic model that is healthy for the economy? And, you know, Walmart's point is, look, we're providing low prices for poor people, and that's true. And the question is there some way to do that without creating more poor people, you know, and growing their own market share by having more poor people shop at their stores because they're paying them so little they can shop nowhere else?
Russell, thanks very much for the call. Joining us now from member station KQED in San Francisco is David Newmark, a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. He'll present a paper looking at Walmart's effect on the U.S. economy this Friday at that Walmart-sponsored conference here in Washington, D.C. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Your study looked at the effects of Walmart on local labor markets. What did you find out?
We studied the effects of Walmart stores at the county level, mm-hmm. Across the United States over a period beginning in the late 70s up until about the mid-1990s. What we find looking at the retail sector, first of all, is that retail employment on the whole declines somewhat when a Walmart store opens, something like a few percentage points. Not entirely surprising. Presumably Walmart has some source of efficiency gains, and one of those is likely reduced employment for the same amount of sales. We also find when we look at the aggregate labor market, total employment or total earnings, that total employment is left about the same when a Walmart store opens, but total earnings decline somewhat, again, in the order of a few percentage points at the county level.
Which suggests that the same number of people are working but making a little bit less money.
That's right. And presumably some of them are shifting out of retail and into other sectors, which is what we might expect to have.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand you got this data, at least in part, from Walmart.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. There's actually a relatively long history, I've discovered, of research on Walmart, much by advocates, but some also by professors and the like. We got interested in the project about a year and a half ago because there were a number of local battles in California over the entry of Walmart stores, and decided to start doing this research and kind of came up with the design for the research project. We were working with data on Walmart stores that another researcher had put together from a lot of imperfect sources, and really coincidentally ran into somebody who I guess was doing some consulting work for Walmart who gave us a contact. And to my amazement, really, and I think it goes to the heart of some of the PR issues you're discussing here,
mm-hmm.
They made available to us a data set on Walmart stores, when they opened, their location, and some other characteristics of the stores.
So you'd have to give the company some credit for providing information. They don't know what conclusions you're going to come to.
I think that's correct, and I suspect they don't like the conclusions, although we'll see what kind of reception the paper gets at this conference you mentioned.
I understand. Did you start out with any preconceived ideas about what you'd find?
Not really, no. I was struck by the sort of anecdotal evidence that Walmart pays relatively low wages, and the claims, some of which you were discussing previously, that increases the public burden through increased reliance on Medicaid, et cetera. As a researcher, I always ask the question, well, just because they pay low wages, does that really mean they lower wages? Or just because a lot of the workers tend to use public benefits, does that mean Walmart's causing that? And we always worry about what we like to call the counterfactual. What would have been the case otherwise? And of course, if the counterfactual is these workers were working in high-paying union jobs building cars and now they're working in Walmart, sure, Walmart will have lowered wages and lowered benefits. If instead they were working in other low-wage jobs with relatively poor benefits, and there's plenty of those jobs in the U.S. economy, Walmart's by no means the only one, then it's wasn't all clear a priori that Walmart had these effects. So that's really what motivated the research.
And in no case, I think, did you probably find that Walmart caused the loss of auto manufacturing jobs?
No one thinks they would. Presumably, they're competing with other parts of the retail sector. I think somebody mentioned kind of the mom-and-pop stores that are out there. With other big box retailers and in general with other service providers.
David Newmark, thanks very much. Have a good trip to Washington.
Thank you.
David Newmark is a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. He'll present his study looking at Walmart's effect on local labor markets at an academic conference sponsored by Walmart here in Washington later this week. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Linda. Linda's calling us from San Francisco. Hello, Linda. Are you there?
Yes. Hi. Yes.
You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to add, I listen to the media a lot, read a lot about Walmart, and I have to tell you that I do shop there. I'm not necessarily lower income, in Silicon Valley maybe I am, I don't know, but I shop there a lot, and what I did at one point was I sort of boycotted, they carried guns, I complained, and a lot of the Walmarts now don't carry guns.
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken to the women managers one-on-one, and you hear story after story how Walmart helped them. One woman's husband died unexpectedly. They took care of the funeral costs. It's not written in her benefits. The women that work there, I couldn't find one that wasn't happy. These aren't necessarily women who can be mainstreamed into office work or whatever. They're very proud to work there. I find that there's just story after story. In addition to that, here is a company that totally contributed millions of dollars to the Katrina relief effort. Right in their store, all the employees whose jobs and homes were gone in the area, they've taken care of them. So I want to get something specific. Is this part of the union helping with the media, helping them because they don't want to be unionized? I find it to be a very a company that's very fair, at least to the women employees, because I'm very concerned about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's my finding.
Remind us of, thank you very much, Linda. Thank you very much. And remind us, there is a sex discrimination suit, Aaron Bernstein.
Yeah, there is indeed. And it basically alleges that.
I'm sorry, there is what? What did you say?
There's a sex discrimination suit pending against Walmart by some of its employees who brought a class action suit on behalf of all women who work there in the United States. And the allegation, which they cite, statistics from Walmart's, internal employment data, is that women are systematically kept in the lower wage menial jobs, the store clerks, who presumably are the ones that you mostly talk to, and that the higher level managerial jobs are disproportionately male, and that promotions are discriminatory against women.
None of that, by the way, goes against anything that you heard from any of the employees. I'm sure all those stories are accurate.
No, that's true. And actually, the other thing about Walmart in terms of women at the bottom of the labor force is they, like other low-wage retailers, in the last 10 years since we've had welfare reform, have been a major source of employment for women coming off of welfare. And that is certainly a good thing.
Absolutely. And I would say probably the women that I speak to that I've spoken to have a lot of those kinds of issues where they would not be hired maybe under other circumstances.
That's exactly right.
Is that a reason to take advantage of them? Absolutely not. That is something that I agree. I don't know who, is putting together class action suit, but I can tell you that, yes, a lot of these women would be women that probably would not be hired in some of the other retail stores, discount or whatever, and they've given them a break. And,
Well, that's probably not quite right, because a lot of low-wage retailers, especially in the late 90s, were hiring anybody they could find, and they were quite actively working with the welfare population. So I think that's a phenomenon that you find across a lot of low-wage employers. I guess my point is that that can be a good thing, and Walmart certainly participates in that along with everybody else. It still leaves the question about, you know, those women, like anybody else, earning poverty-level wages of, you know, $9 or $10 an hour, which if you work all year will get you, you know, maybe to the poverty line.
Linda, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
We're talking about Walmart's remakeover, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joining us now from her office in Bentonville, Arkansas, is Mona Williams, Vice President for Corporate Communications at Walmart. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Neil. I think I'm going to need 4 or 5 hours, though, to refute a lot of the things that have been said over the last few minutes.
Well, I'm assuming Linda's conversation was not one of them. But let me ask you a broad question first. Why has Walmart decided now is the time to people calling it a public relations campaign, but to publicize a lot of the things that it's been doing?
Well, I think you make a key point there, and it's important that folks understand that our activities over the past weeks and months are really not just about communicating outward and making it a PR campaign, but it's really an attempt to make sure we're thinking about the right things to make sure that people in the country are thinking about the right thing. It's a little bit of a shift for us because as we continue to mature as a company, we're thinking about our business in a new way. And key to that is that a lot of the issues, Neil, that we've dealt with from a defensive posture, some of the wages, the benefits, the ethical sourcing, the environment, we're trying to look at those as opportunities to embrace proactively and become a stronger company along the way. So clearly there's more work to do there, but what Lee Scott tried to do last week was lay out a framework for our thinking and do just that.
Mm-hmm. Who is responsible if Walmart has, to the extent that a Walmart has a bad image, who is responsible for that?
Well, I think there are probably multiple folks who can step up to that. You know, we have different types of critics, and I think it's important that we understand there are some folks who aren't going to like us no matter what we do. People who want, you know, us to fail because it lifts them up, and those are some of our competitors and clearly the labor unions. But to be fair, we've made a lot of our own mistakes, so we try to turn toward the other group of critics, and these are people with genuine concerns in these areas who want to work with us and help us to become better in the process and make the country a better place, and we're spending a lot of time with those folks, having a lot of thoughtful discussions.
And including this conference here in Washington, D.C., where you've asked academics to write papers. You don't know what the results are going to be or even if they're going to be positive for Walmart.
No, and there's a lot of risk for us there. And there have been a lot of studies, some, you know, reasonably valid, some a little bit dubious over the past few years. And in the defense of folks writing these, they really did not have all of the Walmart data. And so our primary reason for having the conference this Friday is really to make sure that we have valid data on record for current discussion, but also for future studies. Mm-hmm. And that's why we provided not only our store information, but our hiring data, our wage data by stores. We want to get it all out there for better or worse so that we know what the real story is. We might take a few hits with it. We might not. But at least it's a starting point so that we know where we need to improve and others know where we're strong and where we have opportunities.
I'm sure you saw the story in today's New York Times about the war room that Walmart has set up there in Bentonville to get quick response out to criticisms. Is this a political campaign? Is that sort of thing? I mean, it must cost a lot of money, for one thing.
Well, this room that you saw in the Times this morning is just a few feet from my office. I'm very familiar with it. And when you look at the opposition, the folks who are running the ads against Walmart and out there, you know, agitating, and there's lots and lots of them who are making a living based on criticizing Walmart. They come from a campaign background. They're approaching it like a campaign, and we felt that we needed to do the same thing. Our associates want us to get our story out. Our customers want us to get, you know, the real facts, the true story out. And so we've realized that we've got to be a little more sophisticated in how we do that, and that's what we're trying to do.
We wanted to thank you for joining us today. We've got about 30 seconds. Is there one particular thing that you were anxious about you wanted to correct?
No, just to keep in mind that Walmart does make life better for so many people in this country. And as you look at things that you guys called reputation hits, mm-hmm. The health care memo, the reputation memo, this economic impact study, these are all ways that we're trying to get better, because you have to know where you are to know how to get to where you want to be. And while we do a lot of things right, we're still working on getting better all the time.
Mona Williams, thank you very much. Mona Williams is Walmart's Vice President for Corporate Communications. She spoke with us from her office in Bentonville, Arkansas. And we'd also like to thank Aaron Bernstein of Business Week magazine. Appreciate your time today.
Oh, my pleasure.
We'll have more on public relations after a break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about a new public image for Walmart, and joining us here in Studio 3A is Eric Desenhall. He's president of Desenhall Resources, a crisis management firm here in Washington, D.C. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you help companies facing controversies or crises. Is Walmart's strategy to launch a pretty big PR campaign to burnish its image, is that conventional? Is it the right way to go?
I think that it is unconventional in the traditional sense, but I think it's a very good idea given what's going on. It's important to take a look diagnostically at exactly what type of attack this is. This isn't just a PR campaign. This is what's known as a corporate campaign by critics of Walmart, primarily unions, designed to harass the company. And the harassment is ultimately designed to bring Walmart to the table from a negotiating perspective. So this is a specific type of pathology. So when we call it a PR campaign to respond to it, even though in layman's terms that's the right term, I think it's very important to look at the specific strain of attack that they're facing.
So from the company's perspective, this is not this watchdog group and that activist committee. This looks concerted to them.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no medical analogy, but if you were to use a CAT scan and look at this situation, this would register as a very specific type of problem where you have motivated adversaries who only gain by attacking you. These are not audiences that are interested in being educated. They don't want to learn anything. They don't want information. They want to attack the company.
Well, then, is public relations, which is a form of educating the public, I suppose, is that the right approach?
It's one approach. I mean, usually these campaigns are a mixed bag. What you see happening here, based upon public reports, is a political approach. In conventional public relations, you seek to educate or advertise. You seek to make the company, people feel good about the company. Mm-hmm. In unconventional warfare, which is what this is, you're not only trying to get people to like the company, you're getting them, you want them to dislike your attacker. And that's a very different model than conventional marketing, which is why you see sort of a political war room setup. Mm-hmm. Walmart will not win this by getting people just to love them by running advertisements with little girls with daisies in their hair. They will have to manage this by recognizing that part of the battle is not making them look themselves look good, but making the other guys look bad.
In political campaign terms, drive up your opponent's negatives.
That's exactly right. And corporations are very lily-livered by nature about admitting to wanting to do something like that. One of the things that I thought, from my perspective, was admirable about what Walmart is doing is most companies live in mortal terror of their critics, and they live in even worse terror of doing anything to combat their critics. You don't see Walmart denying that they are engaging in a very assertive program, in part to discredit their critics.
You saw somewhat similar tactics, I think, from McDonald's a few years ago, under assault by, among others, PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And Walmart reformed the way it purchased meat. It reformed the way meat is processed in this country.
Well, there's no question that attacks on companies can alter policy. And that's one of the reasons why some attack groups do it. I mean, not every attack is immoral. I mean, the fact is that every attack on a business interest is always wrapped up in a mantle of virtue. The whole idea is we're doing this for the good of the people. The fact is sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. Any attack on a company is moral, but any time a company begins to defend itself, it's seen as immoral somehow. Yes, policy changes are made, but it's really the obligation of the company to defend itself. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea that any time a company assertively defends itself, that that is some sort of ethical violation, is a concept that I reject.
Here's an email we got from Ted Eldridge in Santa Rosa, California. I confess I tend to look at the motives of large corporations with a rather jaundiced eye, and when I first read the Walmart story this morning, I'm assuming he's talking about the New York Times story about their setting up this war room, the first thought I had was that an increase in the minimum wage would certainly give some increase in the purchasing power of what must be a large segment of Walmart's customer base. As we mentioned, Walmart now says it will lobby for an increase in the minimum wage.
Well, again, what you see Walmart doing here that's very interesting is they are embracing the fact that they are a public citizen, albeit a large public citizen. A lot of companies using the old model just run in terror at the idea of getting involved with legislation, delegate this to lobbyists, and never, ever have their CEOs weigh in. I think Walmart is doing the right thing. Even if you disagree with where they stand, you don't see them running away from the microphone and saying, lobby for the minimum wage? We have nothing to do with this. They're saying we are engaged.
How do you measure success in such a campaign?
You measure success not by how many people you persuade to like you, but how you make it less bad. One of your guests earlier used the phrase counterfactual, which applies to my business as well. Very rarely do, in the damage control world, does anybody take you out and give you a high five for the great job you did. Ultimately, what the goal is to get back to business. What you want to be able to do is go to work with less heartache. If Walmart's objective is to walk out of this situation and be given standing ovations by the public, that will never happen. If the objective is to lessen the heartache that they're currently dealing with, that is measurable, albeit in a very difficult way. It's hard to quantify.
And so you shouldn't necessarily look to the bottom line to quantify this success either. So if Walmart staves off unionization efforts, for example, that might be a measure of a success?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think that there are areas where image matters and there's areas where it doesn't. Plenty of companies, back when the Exxon Valdez situation happened, Exxon was doing better than ever. The oil companies right now are universally despised, but they're doing extremely well. So your goal is not necessarily to correlate how much everyone loves you and wears T-shirts with happy faces and whether or not you can get back to work and do business, which is really what they want to do here.
Eric Desenhall, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Eric Desenhall, president of Desenhall Resources, a crisis management firm here in Washington, D.C. He joined us in Studio 3A. Coming up next, the president gets a plan for tax reform, but the timing could be wrong.